Let's take another look at that bombshell UN report released this week that says humans are putting 1 million plant and animal species at risk of extinction. Today, the global population is more than 7.5 billion. By the end of the century, the UN says it will hit 11 billion. So is the natural world paying the price for the sheer number of human beings living on Earth? Let's hear two opinions. First, Robin Maynard, director of the UK-based group Population Matters. Robin, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Do you see a connection between what the UN report is telling us and the growth in global population?
Yes, I'm afraid I do. And it's not just this one UN report. There's been several over recent years which have made a very close correlation between what scientists are calling the sixth mass extinction, where wildlife, biodiversity, species other than our own across the world are in a state of crisis. Indeed, it's not just the numbers of people, it's our consumption of resources as well.
Sure.
But the numbers of humanity upon the Earth has been ignored for too long.
So is there a point then where we reach peak human when the Earth just can't hold anymore?
Well, that's a very good question. And at the moment, according to the UN statistics, there isn't a peak human graph. You know, it's continuing to grow, even though growth has slowed. There is, you know, it sounds tiny figures. It's sort of 1.1% growth overall. But that still means our population is set to double over 63 years. And the fertility rate, i.e. the numbers of children on average women have, has gone down to about 2.4, 2.5 across the world.
Right. In the 1950s, it was 5 or 6 kids.
Absolutely. So things seem to be going the right direction, but there's such an awful lot of us that actually turning around that critical mass of humanity so that we become in balance with all the other things we rely on the planet. You know, we're not divorced from nature. We need the atmosphere. We need clean water. We need fisheries, etc., etc. And we are eroding away the natural resource base upon which we depend, like every other species.
Look, this theory has been questioned before. I'm sure you know that in the 1960s, Paul Ehrlich wrote a book called The Population Bomb that warned of mass starvation.
Yes.
And it never came true. Yes.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So, but can't we adapt? No matter how many people are on Earth, can't we adapt? Which is what happened in that case. We started getting better at growing food.
For sure. We certainly can't go on forever. And Paul Ehrlich was perhaps ahead of his time. But even the father of the Green Revolution, a guy called Professor Norman Borlaug, said the only thing he had achieved through the Green Revolution, where they bred high-yielding varieties of crops which were very responsive to fertilizers and pesticides, all he'd achieved was a breathing space for humanity to get our population in balance. So, yes, technology can sort of cut the onion a bit finer and get us out of an immediate jam, but it's getting tighter and tighter and tighter.
Do you think the solution is people having fewer children?
I think that is one of the solutions, and it's a critical solution which has been ignored. There was a wonderful piece of work done by Paul Hawken through the Project Drawdown. Their simple premise was, let's look at the top 100 available solutions to climate change that we can start doing now. And then they drilled that down to the top 10. At 6 and 7 were educating girls and family planning. And much to Paul Hawken's amazement, he said, when you combine those, they are the number one most effective solution and technology for reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. They will save more greenhouse gas emissions each year than all onshore and offshore wind power combined. And yet I do not hear Greenpeace or Friends of the Earth or the World Wide Fund for Nature championing the Project Drawdown report.
Isn't it kind of controversial, though? I mean, isn't that kind of controversial, though, to ask people to have fewer children if that's what they want and if that's what they need to do the work on the farm, for instance?
Well, it sounds like it, but of course it's a win-win solution because educating girls enables them to fulfill their life opportunities rather than having children at the age of 14 or 15 in some countries. It enables them to become much more entrepreneurial and independent in their society. It's something which is wanted. You know, it's a human right for women to have a choice over their fertility and their family size. But we also have to think as individuals. I mean, I've got two children. You know, I love them to bits. But as an environmentalist, I have to think, what's the impact of the size of my family, not just upon me and my family, but on the wider community and the wider world? So, yes, there are technological things we can do, but if we don't address our own species responsibly, then we are going to put ourselves in a very, very difficult situation.
That's Robin Maynard. He's director of the UK-based advocacy group Population Matters. Robin, thanks for having this conversation with us.
Pleasure.
And let's get another point of view from Jade Sasser. She's a professor at the University of California, Riverside, and author of the book On Infertile Ground, Population Control and Women's Rights in the Era of Climate Change. Professor, welcome. We just heard Robin Maynard say one solution to ease the human carbon footprint is to encourage women to have fewer babies. Do you agree?
Actually, I don't. The challenge is that population growth or size is not a direct corollary to what people do in the environment. So, for example, the United States accounts for approximately 4% of the global population, and yet it is responsible for around a quarter of the consuming and polluting activities on Earth, including polluting the atmosphere with carbon dioxide. The other thing that I would add is that for women in Africa, I am certainly not against the full distribution of contraceptives. So we do know that women all over the world still don't have the full access to contraceptives and other reproductive services that they would like. What I am suggesting, however, is that providing full access to contraception in Africa will not solve our climate problem.
So you believe that family planning may be a part of this solution, but I wonder if you are concerned at all about some of the things that we've seen in the past. For instance, in the 1970s, fears of overpopulation were behind a program in India to sterilize millions of men, and that has happened more recently in India and in China, places around the globe. I mean, do you think that we are at some risk here with these conversations about overpopulation that something more coercive could happen?
Absolutely. I think we have always been at that risk, and that is something that I focus on closely in my book. So the book chronicles the history of how these scientific conversations around environmental conservation or preventing the spread or intensification of climate change, how these kinds of conversations have historically justified coercive population control measures that abuse human rights. And I'm very concerned that the return of a focus on overpopulation or human population numbers could also usher in these more coercive measures.
Can you give me some other examples that you've seen throughout history that alarm you?
Yes, well, right here in the United States, actually, there is a long history of population control. We tend to focus on countries like India or China. China, of course, is notorious for its one-child rule, which has led to a number of coercive abuses, including frequently sex-selective abortions and fining people for having more than two children. But right here in the United States, there is a long history of sterilizing low-income women, women of color, particularly those who are on welfare, without their knowledge or without their consent. So in the 1970s, there were a number of cases that became very popular in which minors as young as the ages of 12 went into the hospital or went to a clinic to receive other kinds of services, and they came out sterilized without their knowledge. So this is not just in the past, and it's not that far away from us.
I hear you. Obviously, that is not something anyone wants to see. But do you believe that population, global population, is not a threat to the natural world?
What I think is a threat to the natural world is overconsumption of resources. I really want to focus the attention there because in the places like the U.S., like China, like India, where we already see birth rates coming down, we still see an intensification of the consumption of resources, and we see an ongoing rapid acceleration of greenhouse gas emissions and climate change. And so what I'm suggesting is that interventions into population growth in these places have not made a dent when it comes to the rapid pace of climate change. And I think we should really be focusing on the ways that we consume and the economic systems that drive that consumption.
That's Jade Sasser, professor of gender and sexuality studies at the University of California, Riverside. Professor Sasser, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.